Hey everyone, it's John. Just wanted to remind you that next week we'll be starting our coverage of Dune Prophecy. We're super excited to dive in this series alongside what we have left of Dune Part 1, and you'll have some bonus episodes of the podcast to look forward to over the next several weeks. We're going to be going through Dune Prophecy episode by episode, and we're super excited for the series. We hope you join us. We'll see you then. Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep minute by minute into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I'm Zach.
It's Wednesday.
We're back.
My dudes.
It is Wednesday. My dudes. Indeed. We are here to talk about minute 127 through 128.
Correct.
And
of Dune, part one. Directed by Denis Villeneuve.
Released in 2021.
Yes. Originally supposed to release in 2020, but then a little thing happened and then everything got pushed back.
I just remember a toilet paper shortage. That's all I remember. Yeah. Well, John, I have a fair amount of notes for this episode. So what do you say we dive into it?
Let's go ahead.
All right.
So setting the stage because we are in the middle of a paragraph of dialogue here. So
in between sentences still.
Yep. A clean cut.
But in the middle of, in the middle of some dialogue.
Correct. So yesterday we ended off with being inside of one of Paul's visions again. We had Chaul looking at the at Muad'Dib inside of what we believe is the precursor to the still tent. TBD on that one, though. And then Paul being back in the crevasse.
Yeah, I said like canyon.
Sure.
Cavern. Not cavern, but like a enclosed space.
But he's with someone else this time.
Mm-hmm.
The voices that we're hearing left us at the end of yesterday's episode with a friend. A friend will help you.
Mm-hmm.
And today we go with follow the friend.
Follow the friend, they say.
And then who's this friend?
Well, we cut opposite of Paul. We still see him crouching real close to the camera, but we get to see DJ. DJ's back. Dream Jameis is crouching right beside him.
I love that so much.
And DJ says... I mean, he's always coming in with the hot one-liners.
Yeah.
You know, he's always got some good, wise words to say. I'm sure they'll be friends for many years to come once they meet in real life.
God, they're going
to
be the best of friends.
I'm so excited to see that. Dream Jameis, though, says, "You have much to learn, and I will show you the ways of the desert. Come with me."
Come with me.
What a good mentor Jameis is bound to be for Paul.
He's going
to
be fantastic.
Yeah. Couldn't ask for anyone better.
Yeah.
So back in reality.
there goes gravity.
Jessica's walking across the outcropping. I'm assuming this one's a little bit different than the one before.
At least Wadi Rum is a very large place.
So yeah. I mean, their whole MO right now is just hopping from one outcropping to the next.
Sure. Because we talked about, it's the safest place. Safest way for them to move throughout the desert.
Yep. And Paul is walking slightly behind her. It looks like they kind of get to the very edge of the rock.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking out into open territory.
Correct.
Or open deserts.
Sands.
Yeah, open desert worm territory. That's what I meant to say.
Yes.
We get some sweeping shots of the open desert.
Mm-hmm.
Looks beautiful. Again, top marks for the cinematography in this. Just so beautiful.
So yesterday we talked about how all of the shots in the rocky areas were shot in Wadi Rum.
Mm-hmm.
The more open desert scenes, according to Art and Soul of Dune, Volume 1, not sponsored but heavily referenced. Talks about how the wider open desert scenes were shot in a space about 2 hours outside of Abu Dhabi.
Okay.
And it talks a little bit about how the production team essentially set up like their own village here.
Oh, cool.
Just to keep all of the actors and everything in one place and, you know, all mm-hmm. of the gear and everything. So it was right there, because yesterday we talked a little bit about how annoying it was to move all of the camera sure. gear and everything in and out of these canyons. Now do that on sand.
Yeah. The desert's no different.
Yeah. Probably worse, because yeah. you don't have good footing and everything is shifting and doing weird shit yeah, and stuff like that.
That's fair.
And like before, they could only film in the very early or the very late hours mm-hmm. of the day
yeah.
when there was still enough sunlight, but it wasn't a million degrees outside.
Right.
They actually go a little more in depth in Art and Soul, talking about how the cast and crew would specifically like go back to this village during the days and then just like sleep.
Okay.
Just have a good old siesta.
Sure.
Which for all of the production crew and everything definitely makes sense, because if you're up, you know, working all night and
yeah.
whatnot to prep for shots, you yeah. might as well sleep the heat away.
Well, I mean, so, that makes the most sense. Absolutely.
Yeah. But yeah, there were also obviously like concerns with avoiding heat stroke and
sure.
mass dehydration and stuff like that. So,
yep.
That is why the lighting is different
mm-hmm.
in this scene, because they're specifically shooting it either at dawn or dusk.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So we
a little behind the scenes.
I appreciate it. Thank you
for you there.
So we get a cut to Paul using his paracompass. We get to use one of his other gadgets
yep.
from the Frim kit. So I wanted to take a little bit of time to talk about the paracompass, because this does not get a lot of importance in the movie, but it is a very important thing in the books. And I just want to talk about what a paracompass is.
Sure. And we talked about it a little bit when we were first introduced.
Yeah.
When Duncan was showing his toys to all of his friends.
Yeah. But so why do they have a special compass? Why not just a normal compass?
When you have multiple moons yeah. surrounding a planet, I don't know if you know this, but moons have gravitational fields just like planets do.
Yeah. Yep.
And they have magnetic fields just mm-hmm. like planets do. When you have multiple of those going on, it kind of fucks with how magnets work on a yeah. planet. So,
well, we don't know how they work in general.
Yeah, so. It's fucking magic or some shit. I don't know. But
so the Dune Wiki, shout out to all the writers of the Dune Wiki.
Yep.
Any compass that determines direction by local magnetic anomaly, used where relevant charts are available and where a planet's total magnetic field is unstable or subject to masking by severe magnetic storms. So in relation to Arrakis, that is what you said, the two moons.
Yep.
The Coriolis storms definitely will fuck up magnetic lines.
Yep.
We've talked at length about how large those storms are, and because they are mostly, or the large percentage of those storms is, you know, rock and sand and material and all that kind of stuff. All of that has, you know, a single grain of sand doesn't have a whole lot of effect on it. But when you get...
No, but when you have billions of grains
yeah,
of sand...
Yeah, it can definitely have an effect on the direction that a compass, like a traditional compass, would point. So all these things make navigating in Arrakis super, super hard.
Mm-hmm.
Pulling from the Dune Encyclopedia, the paracompass was invented by the Zensuni, which, of course, the
precursors to the Fremen.
Yep.
Yep.
On the planet Harmontep, and that's spelled Harmontep. So Harmontep.
Tep.
I'm going to go with Tep.
Yeah.
That planet is described in this article as having random magnetic fields, which is nuts.
That's crazy to think about.
Yeah. We have the luxury of, you know, existing on Earth, which is, it has a fairly
pretty consistent.
Yeah. Consistent, stable magnetic field.
Yep. You know, it only is the one thing that keeps us from fucking boiling up in yeah. the vacuum of space.
Yep. So shout out to the magnetic field.
Hey, yo, what up?
So I want to talk to you. This is something that you and I had a conversation about a couple of weeks ago. Do you remember me explaining to you how an altimeter works in a plane?
Yes. We talked about this off of the podcast.
Yes, this was an off the podcast conversation that we had, but I was explaining to you how an altimeter works and how when you fly from an area of a specific pressure and temperature and all that stuff, you fly into an area where it has a different pressure and temperature and all that stuff, you have to adjust your altimeter.
Yeah, you have to make a manual adjustment to it.
A paracompass works in that exact same way.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. So when I was reading through how this paracompass works, I was like, oh.
Oh, I get this completely.
I was like, oh, I understand this. So I want to strip away the fiction part of science fiction for a second and say a paracompass is something that we have on Earth. Like, they don't call them paracompasses. We just call them compasses.
Yeah.
But this is absolutely something that you have to do on Earth currently. I related it to the altimeter in the plane. That's one thing that as you're flying, you have to adjust for different areas.
Sure.
But even like on normal compasses, like if you're on a ship navigating in the ocean, you have to make these kind of adjustments for varying magnetic fields and things that are, you know, will draw your compass around. They call it like magnetic deviation.
Yeah.
And this is getting a little bit into the weeds on this, but we have two norths that we on Earth.
Yeah, we have magnetic north and true north.
Exactly. So when you're looking at a compass, you know, if you're your little handheld compass, you're probably not going to notice like a crazy amount of deviation between north and magnetic north.
Sure.
It might not be strong enough or sensitive enough to understand that.
They're actually pretty fucking far apart from each other when you're up there, though.
Yeah, absolutely. So compasses are going to point towards magnetic north. Mm-hmm. That's what a compass is. It's a magnet. Or it uses magnetic fields.
How does it work?
That part we don't know yet. So there's a lot of like fairly easy to understand, but math that goes into how do you correct for, you know, the difference between magnetic north and true north.
Yeah.
It's not a complicated science. We've been doing it for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Well, it also helps that our Earth's tilt doesn't shift.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Right.
How fucking wild would that be if, like, not only, you know, the Earth spins, right? Mm-hmm. But if it also rotated and, like, tilted.
Oh, gosh, that'd be weird.
True north, but magnetic north stayed the same.
Yeah, right. But it's interesting to note that magnetic north does move.
Yeah.
Because of the fluidic nature of our core, the magnetic north will kind of circles around the North Pole.
Yeah.
So you're just because you set your compass once now, like 3 months from now, you're going to have to do it again or whatever time.
Not to just set some dread in you or anything, but you're standing on a ball of molten fucking iron that's spinning around at hundreds of miles an hour beneath your feet. So,
and it's not
stable.
It's not, but it's also not as far down as you'd think.
No, it's not. It's only a couple miles. Yeah. So just think about that next time you drive a few miles to the grocery store. Anyways.
So I thought that, you know, the more I learned about these paracompasses, and it really took me down a rabbit hole of like how compasses work on Earth. It made me realize that this was only just a sprinkle of science fiction on something that is hard science.
Yeah.
And it made me appreciate Frank Herbert's writing
I love more. When science fiction actually like isn't just we did the Borg blop to make the beep boop or whatever. Like there's actual like science and everything into it. And
this is one of those moments.
I feel like we kind of talked about this a little bit. Granted, it's all theoretical because we have yet to actually observe it, but how a Highliner is effectively just like control over wormholes.
Yeah. Yeah. The same
but
idea.
But the science still kind of adds up for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you see a different part of space when you look through the Highliner than you do like outside of it's cool. That's good writing.
I love that shit. Like when it's
that is the hallmark of good writing. Mm-hmm. When you can build this world, but still use things that are grounded in actual science.
Well, same thing with like the sand compactors.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You
know, so.
Yep. So like I said, this is just another like way that Frank's writing is really, really good.
Yep.
And it's like solid world building.
It also helps that the guy was an actual scientist.
Yeah, so. Very true. Very true.
So he's not just like coming up with bullshit. I mean, there's definitely bullshit in here.
Sure. But well, that's where the fiction part of science fiction comes
right. in. Right. Yeah. No, this isn't a documentary.
No. That's my spiel on paracompasses and how compasses work and everything. And I think if you were a skilled navigator in today's Earth and were given a paracompass with just minimal adjustments, you could probably figure out how to work it.
Yeah.
Now the Dune Encyclopedia does go way deep into how like this works, into
the actual mechanics of it and everything.
And like power sources. And that's where things get real hand wavy science fiction.
Sure.
But at its core,
there is science fact to it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, I get that.
I just wish that Paul really knew how to work one. Because his next words,
not what the fuck he's doing.
The next words that we hear from Paul are, the seat where Duncan lived is somewhere off that way.
And then we cut to a monocular shot.
Yeah, yeah. I called it Jessica's spyglass.
Scanning the horizon.
Yep.
And she says, I can see greenery over there.
Can she?
I don't know how many times you watched this.
Four or five.
I didn't see shit.
Yeah.
You know what I saw? Tan and darker tan.
That's why I was like, in my notes, I have, can you question mark? And then in italics, can you question mark? I didn't see a single shrub.
And mine, bold and underlined. I don't know how many times I watched this, but this bitch does not know what she's looking at. And then Paul, just so matter of fact, is just like, that means Fremen lived there.
He sounds over it. Now, keep in mind, this is all ADR. What we're hearing is ADR. This is not them speaking in the moment.
Because if it was not, it would be.
The seat where Duncan lived is off that way. I can see greener over there. That means Fremen lived there.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But his like voiceover, his voiceover that we hear is so monotone.
He sounds so bored.
He's just over it. I talked a couple weeks ago about how in the books at this point, or up until this point, like
Paul's just in mentat mode.
And he's in mentat mode. He is
this dumb bitch.
He's like really just over how slow Jessica's mind is moving. So that's, I kind of think we get a little bit of that in the ADR. Yeah. He's just like, yeah, that means Fremen lived there.
Yeah.
Come on. Get with the program, Mom.
Come on, Mom. If that's what you really are.
Yeah. Right. So we will explore that later, but that's kind of where our minute ends is right there after he says that means Fremen live here. There. Excuse me. That means Fremen live there. I don't know, man. Paul is over it. He's just ready to get anywhere else but here, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, let's regroup tomorrow.
Yep.
As we continue to talk about what exactly they're seeing through the glass and how they're going to get from here to there.
We're moving places.
We are. Yep.
Yeah. If you'd like to reach out to us, you can do so. We are available online in a few different places. The most popular place is on Instagram. Mm-hmm. We are at the Dune Minute there. Ada is standing on my chest right now.
She's got things to say. Let her talk, man. Yeah.
Do you have anything to say?
Yeah, she did it. Keeping that.
Keep the whole thing in there, including this part. We're also available on Twitter at Dune Minute, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch with us the old-fashioned way. You have anything else for the people?
that's it.
Alrighty. Well, we'll be back tomorrow with a Thursday episode.
That's right.
Of the Dune Minute. Can't believe we're almost done with this week already.
I know. It's been a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
All right, cool. We'll see you then.
See you later.